Okay, let's set the scene for this deep dive. We're going back, way back to rural Pennsylvania. It's fall 1989. You can almost feel that Christmas in the air, right? Smell the damp earth, the leaves turning.
Yeah, that typical small town vibe. The source really paints a picture of a place where, life feels pretty predictable, maybe even a little isolated.
Exactly. Quiet. You think you know what to expect? And the source immediately zooms in on one particular family and their kid, Billy. He's just turned 4. And the first detail we get seems totally normal. At first glance, Billy's waking up at night.
Right. I mean, what 4-year-old doesn't wake up sometimes? Seems pretty standard.
But it's how he was waking up. The source describes him giggling in the dark and whispering.
Yeah, whispering about someone. The phrase he kept repeating, it wasn't just random sounds. It was Tubby came to play.
Cubby came to play. And reading that, your first instinct, like the parents probably was, is okay, kid's got an imaginary
A
friend.
slightly creepy one, maybe, with the whispering, but yeah, a phase. Harmless.
You think so? But the source immediately, like, slams the brakes on that idea. It shifts right from that, potentially innocent explanation to something solid. Physical evidence.
Footprints outside.
Big ones. The source is specific, large, adult-sized footprints discovered right outside the house.
And not just anywhere outside. They led directly from the edge of the woods.
Right up to Billy's window.
Yeah.
That detail, what does that do to the narrative for you?
Well, it shatters that whole imaginary friend comfort zone, doesn't it?
I
Suddenly you have this stark contrast. Inside, you've got the little kid giggling about Tubby. Outside, you've got these heavy adult prints.
It makes it real, tangible,
Yeah.
and frankly, terrifying. It suggests whatever Billy's talking about isn't just in his head, it's right there.
Steps away from his bed. That's where the source really starts building that deep sense of unease, I think. It takes the internal fear and gives it muddy boots.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the source also fills in some background about the neighborhood, introduces a figure who lived nearby. Down Cornfield Road.
Right at the very end of the road, a house described as, well, rotting. Not exactly picturesque.
And the man who lived there.
Old Man Ritter, that's what the adults might have called him. But the source clarifies the kids had a different name.
Which was
Grandpa Tubby.
Grandpa Tubby. Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, he used to wave from his porch, often wore this faded purple sweater, just sort of there, part of the local color, I guess.
Until he wasn't. The source notes that winter, Ritter just vanished.
Yeah, disappeared. And the neighbors, the account says they just sort of shrugged it off. Assumed he'd moved away, maybe gone to live with relatives. No big investigation, nothing.
Just an empty, rotting house at the end of the road. A quiet disappearance that happened before the really awful stuff kicked off.
Exactly. It's presented as just another detail, almost background noise at first, until later events make you look back at it and just shiver.
Because that disappearance, it wasn't the end. It was almost like a clearing of the stage, because the source recounts what happened next. On October 31st, Halloween night.
Billy vanished while trick-or-treating. Just gone.
A parent's worst nightmare. And the source tells us where they found his little candy bucket.
Near Ritter's property line, close to that rotting house.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, full of Snickers and M&Ms.
No. The source says it was filled with cookies. Homemade cookies.
Shaped like characters from children's shows.
Yeah.
That detail is just chilling. It takes something so innocent, trick-or-treating, homemade cookies, and twists it into something really sinister.
It absolutely does. And from there, the source details the investigation turning towards Ritter's empty house, specifically the basement.
And what they found down there, it's hard to even process. The source lists items that paint a really disturbing picture. 4 handmade costumes were found.
Handmade.
Yeah. And one is specifically noted as having like a sagging purple headpiece, like that sweater Ritter wore.
Oh, God.
And there were letters, dozens of them. Written in this childish scrawl, the source implies it's that Tubby persona addressed to different kids in the neighborhood.
Addressed to children.
And VHS tapes. Tapes of kids' shows, but paused. Pause on these really unsettling close-ups of the characters' faces.
What does that collection of items, as the source describes it, suggest to you about Tubby or Ritter or whatever this was?
It screams obsession, right?
Yeah.
A really deep, profoundly disturbing fixation on children, but filtered through this lens of corrupted innocence.
Yeah.
The handmade costumes, the personal letters, the way the tapes were paused, it all points to someone deeply invested in that world, but in a predatory, twisted way. The source highlights how symbols of childhood were being warped.
And then there was the freezer.
Yeah. The source details what was inside. A life-sized doll.
Life-sized.
With Billy's exact hair color. And its smile. It wasn't painted on. It was stitched. A permanent stitched smile.
Just utterly horrific. The source makes it clear. Old Man Ritter, Grandpa Tubby, whatever you call him, was never seen again after Billy vanished.
Never found. Case went cold. The source mentions the family, Billy's family, understandably couldn't stay there.
No, who could? They moved. The account says they went clear across the country, like 6 months later, just trying to get away.
Trying to leave that nightmare behind them, buried back in Pennsylvania, put thousands of miles between them and the Peaks.
And you read that and you think, okay, maybe that's the end. A terrible, unresolved tragedy, but contained, locked in that time and place.
You'd hope so. But the source delivers one last twist. One final terrifying scene. Months later, new house, unpacking boxes.
Billy's mother screamed. A scream from Billy's new bedroom.
And the source tells us why. Sitting there, amongst the boxes you'd expect to hold old blankets or maybe some forgotten toys, was a plush toy.
A purple plush toy.
Yeah. And the source adds these sensory details. The fur was sticky. And the smile, like the doll's, wasn't normal. It was stitched on. Unstitched, actually. Like it had been pulled apart and crudely resewn.
And then its book.
Not like a normal toy's voice box. The source describes it as a tiny broken voice coming from its belly.
What did it say?
It said, Tubby found a new place to play.
Tubby found a new place to play.
Yeah.
And that's where the account ends. Just hangs there. This impossible object, this message, thousands of miles away. Ritter was never found. The toy's origin. The voice. Completely unexplained by the source.
It just leaves you reeling. How did that toy get there? Who or what is Tubby if it wasn't just Ritter? Or was it Ritter somehow, extending his reach? The source offers no comfort, no answers.
And that final line, presented as the absolute end of the narrative. Tubby found a new place to play. What does that really imply, according to the source's telling?
It implies it's not over. That whatever this thing is, this presence, it's not tied to one place or even one person like Ritter. It's mobile. It suggests that something you thought was finished left behind.
And show up again in a new form, in a new place.
Yeah. What does finding a new place to play truly mean for the next family, the next town? The source doesn't tell us, but it forces you to think about it.
What happens when Tubby decides to play again? Where's the next place? That's something to dwell on.